Hi, you are listening to a free Majority Report. If you would like to become a member, please go to majority.fm.
Yeah, say your
name. Oh, my name's Janine Garofalo. How are you?
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, January 11th, 2013. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means? Cliff Schechter will be with us. And also, ladies and gentlemen, longtime listeners of this version of the Majority Report will be ecstatic to hear the announcement of our second guest today to give us movie recommendations, or specifically Golden Globe predictions, for the thousands of you who have joined us over the past year. You will not, this name may or may not be familiar to you, but you're in for an amazing treat. Yes, the prodigal son returns. Chris Rosen, no longer of Movie Phone or Movie Line, but apparently now at the Huffington Post entertainment thing. Chris Rosen will be joining us with movie reviews. We'll get to Cliff in just a moment, Cliff Schechter. Chris Rosen will be joining us later. Literally, I can hear people cheering now as they heard me say that. There was a lot of people who were just ecstatic for no reason. I mean, I literally could hear them, even though they're cheering in the future from when I speak. On the program today, another anti-gay pastor who was to give an invocation at the this round of President Obama's inauguration. Apparently he's going to step aside because he's anti-gay. And in the 4 years, apparently, that have passed, now that's not cool. So, and happily speaking, we'll get into Jack Lew. We're hearing at least some resistance from the left on Jack Lew's nomination to the Treasury Secretary. The New York Times has decided that Climate Bureau, Schmimate Bureau. Let's not focus too much on that. We've got plenty more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. I want to remind you folks that it is your membership that supports this program. 98.7% of our revenue comes from our members, and blessedly so. I have benefactor that is paying for the revenue of this program. No one who can tell me what to say. No one who can turn around and say, we're going to close this baby down and I'm going to pocket $100 million. None of that. It is, you can always be sure, you can disagree with what I say, and many people do. But you can always be sure that what I am saying on this program and the opinions that are expressed are mine and mine alone, and a function of nothing but what I've read or considered, as opposed to what I think is going to please some nameless individual or individuals or corporate masters. If you value that, as many of you do, and you can afford to, please become a member today at majority.fm. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Cliff Schechter.
your mind.
We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report. A reminder, we'll be taking your phone calls later in the program, 646-257-3920. We welcome all callers. But right now, as we do on every Friday that we're super lucky, we have Mr. Cliff Schechter. But before we go to Cliff Schechter, of course, we've got to go to the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Hello, Cliff. Welcome to the program.
Hey, Sammy. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you for joining us. You know what I love about that theme song, too? Is it's full disclosure. We know where you're coming from, you represent and work with different organizations. The
NRA, big oil, pharma,
exactly.
Fix the debt.
And
the
important thing is that we're upfront about it. It would be.
I find that fixing the debt is a very important thing that we do, maybe perhaps immediately.
Yes.
In fact, I think we should take a DeLorean back maybe 7 or 8 years and try to fix the debt then.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe see if we can't cut more jobs that way.
Indeed.
You know what I mean?
Indeed.
Starting
you know how dangerous surpluses can be, as we were told.
Where
back
we're going,
in the day.
Sam, we don't need roads.
Yes. Everything's going to be hovercraft. excuse me. But one of the things that you work on, obviously, and we've spoken about this many times in the past, is obviously it's something that you've been working on for years, but not necessarily in a sort of semi-professional capacity, is gun control, some type of reasonable regime in which we make sure that these weapons that are designed to kill, I mean, yes, people like to go out and shoot at targets, but ostensibly at the end, it is to learn to shoot something other than a target at the end of the day, are treated with the respect and the level of responsibility that is necessary to have a functioning society. I mean, It has felt like, and I don't know that I'm just imagining this, but almost every time that we have you on this program, there has been another high-profile shooting. This week we had one in a high school again. Fortunately, the kid only had a shotgun, and so was actually, after he shot one or two people, was able to be talked down. But one can only imagine if he had the ability to just squeeze that trigger and, release 32 rounds of a high-powered, caliber.
Right. Well, also the teacher talked him down. Remember those terrible teachers that make too much money and are greedy but we want to give guns to?
Right.
Without really training them, giving them like 3 hours of NRA training, which I can only imagine what NRA training looks like, which is, hey, that guy looks black. You should probably shoot them.
Well, no, the first thing I think the NRA training does is like you have to learn how to write an email so that you can prove that you can raise some money for us. And then from there we move.
That's true.
And I mention that because I want to talk about what we know right now that the Obama administration is at least considering going forward. But at the end of the day, no one knows better than you, and to the extent that I know it, a lot of it is because of work that you have done. But the NRA is really about enriching certain segments of our society, and I think that's consistent with a lot of what we see in the conservative movement. I don't want to get there yet, but I think that's important to keep in mind. as we have this conversation, because this week...
You mean how the NRA tracks the conservative movement? Is that what you mean?
Indeed.
It almost is like perfectly. If you, and we've discussed this in certain degrees on the show before, but I mean, if you literally were to map out when the right went nuts, which is the 1970s, and all elements of it, when it went from being a sort of group of establishment guys who believed in generally in balanced budgets and but believed in progress for the country, even if it was albeit slower than some of us would like, and were sort of what would be considered a reasonable conservative party in a democracy, when they went to embracing a much deeper strain of radical populism that has led to totalitarian and far right movements taking over in Europe and really throughout the world, and those became the leading voices, or at least the loudest voices, and slowly over 30 years became the leading voices as they displaced the more mainstream ones. I mean, you can take any recent action from a Todd Murdoch, Richard Murdoch, I think it is actually, yeah, knocking off Dick Lugar. While you and I would disagree with Dick Lugar in a whole lot of things, but sort of a more calm voice of reason, at least in the past, who joined even on certain gun control measures and joined in on campaign finance reform and was sort of someone that you and I would disagree with, but was a constructive member of Congress, being knocked off by a guy who thinks rape is God's gift in a primary. By the way, and then if you want to connect it further, the NRA, their biggest check was written to Richard Murdoch. None of this is coincidence with the Heritage Foundation opening in 1973, ALEC being founded in 1973, the Moral Majority coming, I think it was 77, 78, yeah, the Cincinnati Revolt, which is where the annual meeting was being held here in Cincinnati when the hardliners in the NRA knocked off the older establishment guys that believed that the NRA was about crazy stuff, you know, like sporting and education and training. And in the past, the NRA had actually sat at the table in the 1930s, with FDR, and then in 1968 when they passed the Gun Control Act after RFK and MLK were killed. And, yeah, they had advocated a more conservative line. They disagreed with some things, and they blocked some aspects. But they, in the end, were at least a semi-constructive force that worked with the administration and helped pass some gun regulations. And they, much like the rest of this right-wing movement we stare at today, went nuts, went into a sort of cocoon of anti-government, you know, Christian male angst, you know, paranoia, and this is what's come out on the other side.
Right. I mean, I think it's important for people to see and to understand what we're seeing from the NRA is that that guns have become another social identification issue. I mean, I perceive this issue to be very much, at least in terms on one level, the dynamics, to be not unlike the homophobia, not unlike the anti-immigration, not unlike the anti-feminism. All part of a whole in terms of creating these sort of cultural identifiers for people.
That's exactly right.
And that's the way that the NRA is operated. But before we get there, I want to first, let's just start with, you know, sort of on a recap of what we've heard this week in terms of what we think the administration is planning to unveil. We know that Biden is scheduled to present his recommendations, I think, on Tuesday of next week. And talk to us about what you're starting to get a sense may be part of those recommendations.
Absolutely. Well, let me say first one or two things. One, that you're in terms of a cultural identifier, yeah, we'll get more into that. But I want to say quickly, you're exactly right. And then sort of the irony of this is that I remember sort of having these conversations with you a few months back and saying, you know, why won't President Obama understand that same coalition that he's building around the Dream Act and supporting gay marriage and the other things that we're building, this multi-ethnic, younger, more educated, more urbane, you know, coalition, was that guns were a big part of that. Because, again, they are a cultural signifier like homophobia and these other things you're talking about to an older, more rural, more Christian evangelical white base. and male more than anything else, patriarchal, let's call it. So, yes, I mean, and it's amazing how Newtown has now brought guns up to that level where they've realized this, which I thought they should have a long time ago. But, okay, we're there.
The thing is that Obama always knew this. I mean, like we heard, right, that statement he made back in 2008 about clutching
cleaning the guns in religion.
Yes. And so,
yeah, he did know it. I just never understood why they didn't understand. They couldn't look at the same demographic picture they looked at with gay marriage and with immigration reform and understand that, you know, if you take any poll of minority groups, Hispanics, African-Americans, the well-educated whites, younger people, that the support for gay marriage is through the roof and the support for immigration reform is through the roof. The support for new public safety measures, for new gun control is through the roof too. It's the same, they didn't seem to get it, and now this has moved into that place. I know you want to talk about this later, and I don't want to get off on this right now. So, and I'll be clear when I'm talking about this, I like to say this, I consult for Mayors Against Illegal Guns, but I'm speaking for me right now and what I think. That it sounds like from what Vice President Biden in his meetings, what they've said, is they've realized again and again the key issue, and one of the ones that I've fought for the most, which is one of the most common sense measures that there's simply no defense against from the other side. There's just nothing, which is closing the gun show loophole, is how people put it, but really in the end is having universal background checks. It means not at gun shows. It means not you selling a gun out of your backpack in a parking lot in a manner in which you could not sell your automobile that way without having the government know about it. It means that we actually have a fully working database so that we can trace who sells guns to who, and keep track of these things and make sure that those who have been declared mentally unfit and those who have criminal backgrounds, including misdemeanor, domestic abuse and other violence and things like that, should not have access to them. That is the key thing that keeps coming up, as Joe Biden has said. And I'm not surprised about that, because it's really one of those things that everybody can agree on, unless the only thing stopping you are your paranoia of a government coming and knocking your door down, or if you want to just sell more guns. Those are the only two reasons you could be against closing the gun show loophole.
It is. It's interesting because last night I was I did Joy Behar's show, which is still on in at least 14 houses households across the country. And
I'm sure you'll get invited on again now.
I probably stole that joke from her. And there was one of the old style rock ribbed Republicans on with me, a nice guy. That's basically what I kept saying to him. Like, okay, you want to argue that none of these guns were bought at a gun show? And I'm like, okay, even if I stipulate that, what is the cost? What is the cost to our society if we broaden the scope in which one needs to register the sale of a firearm, to include that and to include the, hey, look at in the back of my trunk here. I got all these guns, which one do you want to buy? And I would add, not just the scope of background checks, but the depth. So the scope meaning we include all sales, and the depth meaning that we also do a background check that cross-references things like, has this guy ever been involved in a domestic abuse situation, or is there some indication of receiving social services because of mental health issues? So we're talking about the scope.
So that in those cases, and I'll just say quickly, because people have said, well, what about those cases, whatever? Well, in a case like that, there are times where you could sit there and say, maybe there could be a third category where, okay, we're not denying you, we're not giving you a gun right now, but maybe if there had been some mental health issues or whatever, there's a delay period. Well, mm-hmm. Some people look into it and whether you should have that right, which I think is a legitimate thing to ask for in a democracy.
Right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, no, but I mean, so, and there is no answer for this. I mean, he had no answer for it in terms of like, why wouldn't we take this? Why in this situation, even if you perceive it as an excess of caution, Why wouldn't you take excess of steps that are in excess of caution because of the implications of being less than cautious?
That, and that's the thing. They don't. There is no answer. There's absolutely. I've had this argument, as you can imagine, so many times. In other arguments I've had, people can bring up legitimate grievances. You know, you have an argument with people, for example, whether, you know, on closing what we call the terror gap. And saying that people who can't get on an airplane shouldn't be able to buy guns. People say, well, but some names have been erroneously put on that list and there hasn't been due process. And my answer is, we fix the list. You know what I mean? I mean, if there is that, it's not too much of a to stop somebody from getting a gun that can take a 50 caliber rifle that can take down a small aircraft. I think it's worth saying, well, there may be a name or two erroneously on that list, but that's, those are the chances we need to take to at least stop it in the time being while we investigate. And we need to do what we can to improve that list. But at least I accept that as, okay, you're coming back to me with a legitimate argument. I think the need for public safety outweighs your argument. But at least you're, but there is no legitimate argument for why you wouldn't close the gun show loophole. None. There just simply isn't one for why you would require that. Their argument always is exactly what you're saying it is. Oh, it just won't work. They've got no proof that it won't work. When 40% of guns we know right now are sold without any kind of background check whatsoever, and we know the gun show loophole or loopholes on the internet have been used to purchase weapons where we don't track these things by everybody from the murderer in the movie theater in Aurora, Colorado, to the murderer at the Sikh temple in Wisconsin, to the Columbine killers who use the gun show loophole. So when these people say there are no examples where those loopholes have been used, they're, first of all, they're lying through their teeth. And statistically, of course, you would see that the more background checks you do and the more involvement you have in looking into people's past, you would prevent a lot of these things. But that's what they'll come back to you with. They'll just say, well, it won't work. I mean, someone will just sell guns illegally and buy guns illegally. Well, have you guys ever noticed that when you make things illegal and you enforce making them illegal and you have the FBI follow up on stuff and track people trying to do illegal things and share information with the ATF, which you don't allow them often to do right now and stuff. It's amazing how you can stop people from doing stuff. It's also amazing when you have background checks and you force people into the black market situations, how dumb many of these people are and they get caught. It's amazing how people forget that the guy who, you know, was a part of the first attack on the World Trade Center in 1993 after blowing up his van famously went back to the car rental place to get his deposit back.
Right.
On the van he blew up, which is how they caught him. Because they were following him and tracking him and doing what federal authorities are supposed to do. I mean, to say that there'd be no effect of actually culturally there'd be no effect of making it clear to people these are dangerous weapons legally and there'd be no effect in terms of pushing people into situations where the FBI and ATF and others can monitor them are just ignoring everything we know about law enforcement.
I'll tell you something. I actually think that the implications of it the cultural implications are perhaps the best argument. I mean, we clearly in this society have a casualness, or at least those people, you know, when we talk about what happened in Connecticut, the casualness and the sort of the mental perspective of the mother who was training this kid and she was training this kid in the context of, like, you know, we're in a situation here where you may have to fight yourself out of, like, you know, the coming hordes. When I brought up the assault weapon ban, and I want to say that we had been told, or at least there had been some reports, that the White House was not still considering an assault weapon ban, or it was going to deal with just high capacity magazines, perhaps, that CNN has reported just about 45 minutes ago that the White House is still committed to an assault weapons ban. That this guy's response was, well, what about when we had the LA riots and we heard all those stories about those Korean grocers, I'm not kidding here, of, you know, protecting their stores from rioters. And I'm like, wait, are you really telling me that we need to allow for high capacity automatic weapons? So in the event that we have riots, so that storekeepers can basically shoot at will people who are coming in? I mean, look, you know what? I would
the hypotheticals. I mean, that we actually have nicknames for a lot of these things that those of us who work in this, you know, I mean, and that's like that's one of their classic hypotheticals. Well, what if aliens came down from the moon, you know, because it could happen, and you were trapped, and your government was not able to defend you. They were defeated by said aliens. You might need, in sort of a Tom Cruise type fashion from War of the Worlds, or what's his name? Oh, what was his name? Tim. Susan Sarandon's former husband. I can't think of his
name. Tim Robbins.
Tim Robbins, there you go. You might need to be in your basement protecting yourself from the blood-curdling aliens. I mean, you know, the hypotheticals that these guys can come up with are amazing. But I think one of the best jobs, which is not surprising anymore, and I think this extends as a compliment to you, Sam, which is honestly these days it's like the people that are comedians who do news as well as comedy who probably are the best at sorting out what's going on in our society. And I throw you into that group. You know, Jon Stewart did this the other night where he did two segments starting off his show because he had a break on this. And his whole point was, so what we need to do is not do anything about the 10,000 murders going on every year now because there may be an imaginary Hitler in the future.
Right.
The argument that, well, there's nothing we can do about it, you know, it's just going to, you know, he brought up, when you bring up the cultural part of it, and I always say that that is such a huge aspect of this, he brought up the one that I always like to talk about, the two that I like to bring up are secondhand smoke and drunk driving. There was a time in the 1970s where drunk driving wasn't even illegal federally. In a lot of states, it was still acceptable. In other ones, it wasn't enforced. It was kind of laughable and funny, and everybody joked about it, even in our culture. It just wasn't taken seriously. And then this accident happened where this woman's daughter was murdered. I can't think of her name right now. And she just recently wrote a piece on that the same thing should be done with guns that she did with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. And, you know, Jon Stewart went to this whole litany, and they were like, well, let's see. They pointed out that drunk driving laws, somebody actually said this, well, not all drunk driving stopped when they did that, but let's see what actually did happen. Let's see, we got bartenders to be held legally responsible when they served people they shouldn't serve. We raised the drinking age from 18 to 21. We passed all sorts of larger penalties. We started enforcing it on the highways and on and on and on. What we did, we had public service announcements warning people about the danger. And suddenly it became not such a joke, not something that was funny, but it became a very serious thing. And, oh, what's happened? Our drunk driving rate has gone down by 2/3 over the last 30 years.
Absolutely.
And that's what you do on guns. Everybody asks me what you do. It has to be comprehensive. You close the gun show loophole. You get assault weapons. You ban assault weapons and high capacity magazines. To me, you register all guns. I mean, again, this is coming from me. This is what I think you should do. What Australia did. You have waiting periods if you need for people that are questionable buying weapons. You have public service announcements about people not leaving guns lying around, which led to Adam Lanza's situation and also the one that happened here in Northern Ohio. Chardon High School, a kid found guns lying around his grandfather's barn. And that, I mean, people should, in polite society, if they notice that there are guns around somewhere, you should be shunned for that.
Right. And you know, a buyback plan, these days, the way that we you know, people are so uptight about the money, but a buyback plan would also be a good
Australia
idea.
Bought back 1/5 of their nation's guns,
yep,
after the Port Arthur massacre. That, of course, is a big part of it. It's so people will say, oh, you just want to ban guns. No, there's a really multifaceted cultural change that needs to,
yes,
happen that includes public service, which is what I think a lot of what Gabby Gifford's new group is going to do. There's the actual laws that need to be changed, which help reinforce the cultural change. You know, there's our mental health system. Everybody wants to now. I love how Republicans love our mental health system. As I've watched in state by state, because this is an issue that I actually care about, and my wife lobbied on in Washington. And I know that's a dirty word, but she lobbied for people that were, you know, for addiction services and things like that, as opposed to just throwing people in prison. And we watched as during these budget crunches, the first thing everybody went for were to gut their mental health systems. I saw it happening with a Democratic governor here in Ohio. Okay, a Democratic governor that had been a former prison psychologist.
Yes.
I watched as he, instead of raising taxes on the top 2%, like he could have, gutted our mental health system. So, you know, I'd love there to be a newfound commitment to our mental health services, to treating people better in those, to not have these places seem almost like prisons, to rooting out mental illness early on, to treating people as they need to be treated. I would love all of that, and all of that would help this situation too. You know, it's not to say there aren't other parts of this equation.
There's, you know, the other fascinating thing about this that I've just found out this week was that our government's capacity to actually research the causes of gun violence and to come up with solutions to gun violence was seriously inhibited in the 1990s not surprisingly, by the NRA. Apparently, and I had no idea about this, but this is from a New York Times piece last year, that in the 1990s, the CDC, this is the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, had been beginning to step up its finance of research into gun-related deaths as a public health issue. Because if you've got, you know, like you say, 11,000 gun murders and, you know, nearly equal, if not greater amount of gun-related suicides, this is a public health issue. And the NRA basically went in mobilize its people on the Capitol Hill, seriously intimidated via their bought and paid for legislators, the CDC. The CDC backed off. There's no federal agency that can actually look into this now without putting in jeopardy the rest of their financing. And so we've actually, you know, this is a perfect example when I hear, you know, when I sit down with these guys, they're like, we really don't know the real reasons of it. Well, there's also a good reason why we don't know the real reasons of it, because the same lobbying outfit, the same scam that basically represents that really is more of a trade organization than anything else, protecting the profits of the gun industry, has prevented anybody from looking into the implications of this product they sell. I mean, this would be the functional equivalent of the tobacco industry basically using their strength back in the day to say, like, we don't want the government to look into this whole thing about lung cancer.
But this is exactly the same thing, and it's the same thing that went on for the longest time and still persists with climate science and with environmental degradation due to fossil fuels. Again, you know, truth having a liberal bias, that Colbert joke and all that. Well, in this case, I mean, there could be no more clear example of guys that need to suppress information, because information is their enemy. So as you pointed out, the CDC, and I've got a good friend of mine who works there, who also was involved in implementing some of the solutions in Australia after Port Arthur. And he would, you know, he has told me many times about the chill that's gone, chilling effects going on at the CDC when you want to do something that has even remotely touches on gun violence. The NIH, same thing. But then you look even further and you see when it comes to law enforcement mechanisms, they say, oh, we just want to support all the laws in the books. No, they don't. What they've done is they've done everything in their power to suppress the ability of it. We haven't had somebody running the ATF since 2007, because they got the Congress to change ATF director to a position that had to be approved by the Senate, and then they made sure the Senate won't approve anybody.
Right.
Then they passed these TIHART amendments that don't allow trace information the ATF has to be shared with other federal agencies. Can you imagine if we were doing that after Al Qaeda attack and said you can't share information you have on Al Qaeda? Sorry, FBI can't share it with the CIA. Not allowed. You know, the ATF gets stuff. Can they share it with Homeland Security, FBI, CIA? No, often they can't do it, and that's because these guys have suppressed that. Basically, any way they can hinder information from being shared on guns, they've done it. So it's been left to private institutions. And the truth is when they say, "Well, we don't know," we do know. Because a lot of private institutions have taken that up. The University of Pennsylvania School of Epidemiology, which would tell you if there's a gun in your house, there's you're 4.46 times more likely to die from a firearm. Because, if you want to get a gun in your house to protect yourself, even in the what I would do, which is regulating it, registering and licensing and the rest, I would allow you to do that, even though I would make sure that it's heavily regulated. But you should know that you're much more likely to die at your own hands or the hands of an intruder or one of your kids or somebody else than you are to ever thwart somebody trying to break into your house, which happens so minimally, even though the NRA tries to blow it up and make it seem like we're an Escape from New York type dystopia where people are going to bust down your door, where Snake Plissken's going to come and shooting
second. And this gets to that broader point, as I want to transition into sort of the other aspect of this, that we know that the majority of NRA members support a more sensible gun control regime, if you will. And we also know that the number of gun sales has skyrocketed over the past 4 or 5 years. We know that it's being bought by a smaller and smaller cohort of people, these guns. So you have, instead of everybody owning one gun, what you're having is individuals owning multiple guns. And
you're having a lot of Wacos out there and, with what you've got.
And a decreasing group of people who are buying these guns. And a lot of that, frankly...
Just to be clear, Sam, and I want to interrupt you, but just so people know the stats on that, in the late 70s, again, 54% of households had one weapon in them that was owned. Now we're down to 32%. So we've gone from over half to under a third, just so people are clear on what those numbers are.
And we know, and I'm frankly surprised we haven't seen sort of a comprehensive, you could probably measure gun sales against the email campaigns run by the NRA and their subsidiaries, basically stoking this prepper-like fear, whether it's you get a prep for the hoarding masses coming to your home when we all get the freeze-dried food and you're going to be in your bunkers, but you also have to watch out because President Obama is going to be knocking on your door personally with a a black helicopter hovering above and going to be
right.
taking all your weapons. All of this is part of their fundraising, essentially. Both they're getting paid twice, right? One is from the gun makers because this is simply a marketing campaign for a product, one that happens to be incredibly lethal, but for a product. And on the flip side, it's also this is an email campaign to make money for them. So in that respect, it's no different from, let's say, the FreedomWorks story that we all heard about over the past couple of weeks. Or
yep.
Michelle Bachmann.
The Michelle Bachmann story?
Yeah,
Dick Morris?
Yes. Talk about that. I mean, let's bring this in because, this is something that I've been talking about from the other end, which is that there is a misaligned interest between what the so-called Republican leadership want and what has become of the conservative movement in this country, which
right.
is basically a scam, whether we see Alex Jones go on Piers Morgan and talk about 1776 is coming back. Because he wants to drive revenue for his business. He also may be crazy.
Sam, you've got such a pre-April 19th, 1775 mentality.
I know. It's true. It's true. But he's, for him, it's a twofer. I think he's also, to be fair, probably a little bit crazy. But he's also driving, he's also looking to drive traffic.
Well, I think he, LaPierre, Nugent, and Glenn Beck, the four horsemen of the apocalypse, if you will, all share the same traits. They're all paranoid delusionals who need serious psychological help on one level. And at the same time, they know they are to a certain degree, and they know they make a lot of money off of being, so they don't want that help. I don't think it's mutually exclusive. I think it's both. They profit from being crazy, and they are crazy.
Right.
And so I think that that's a key component here. But what you're bringing up, I don't know if you've had Rick Perlstein on your show lately, but he wrote a brilliant article for The Baffler. And he looked into sort of all these different all the different scams that these guys run and, Newsmax and Town Hall, where they get all your emails. They get you frothed up on the New World Order and all the crazy conspiracy and the Bilderbergers and the black helicopters coming. And that's how they get your emails. And then they sell those emails to anybody.
I have multiple email accounts that I have had over the years for different shows. And I have both, I don't know if to call it a mistake or the blessing of having signed up for just literally one or two of these outfits just to see what they're doing. I think it was the National Prayer, during the Bush administration, they were sending out national prayers to pray for George Bush on like a weekly basis. And now these email boxes are filled with the most sort of atrocious and bizarre WorldNet Daily, Tea Party Express. I mean, all of these organizations, they are very, very aggressive in selling these emails.
I mean, we need to make these connections, which is the base of the Republican Party are stupid old white guys. They may come back to haunt me. I don't really care. They're exactly – and they're the types of people –
someday you'll be a stupid old white guy.
I may already be. But basically the same people that are being preyed on by Glenn Beck and those guys are being preyed on by – you must buy gold and, oh my God, are you losing your hair? Have a drop of this and all your hair will magically grow back down to your butt. And I mean, the same people who come to you with every scam, the same people that would send you the email, oh my God, you never believe what happened. I just got mugged and I'm in Nigeria. If you can just send me your social security number and your bank account, I found $2 million on the street, but I need your bank account to do it. So if I'll send that money to you and then you just give me what I need, you know, the $1,000 to fly back and you can keep the rest. That kind of email marketing that is just one big scam ties perfectly into the conservative movement because it's the same people buying that crap who buy Glenn Beck's crap. So they've got overlapping interest. And this, so Rick Perlstein wrote about this, and you know because you're on these lists. Rachel Maddow just did her piece on Dick Morris. Same thing. I mean, Dick Morris set up a super PAC, and then his email list is housed at Newsmax, I believe it is. And so he basically got his super PAC where he raised money in $20 increments to buy the email list for millions so that then they could use his email list to raise more money. To put into his pocket and give a cut to Newsmax. And this is how the whole scam goes. So whether it's those guys or it's – we talked about Mitt Romney's media advisors who charged him huge amounts of money and then had him getting charged literally 3 to 4 times as much to run the same ad that Barack Obama was running because they didn't place them to the last minute and didn't plan out or whatever. I mean, it's just all these people are involved in this elaborate scam. And the NRA is part and parcel to this. They realize that they can scare their old white base of two things. Government's coming to get you, and darker people are coming to get you. And they play on those two things, which is why Obama is singled out and Eric Holder is singled out. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. The best of both worlds. It's government and black people coming to get you.
I mean, I just opened up one of these email accounts, and it just like out of the first, aside from like, you know, excellent guests from your show, which all come actually from right wingers. But I have Town Hall Spotlight, U.S. government officially guaranteed to collapse. And right next to, did you see Ben Shapiro destroy Piers Morgan? Piers Morgan gets smacked down on the Second Amendment. I mean, this is all part and parcel, right? I mean, because if the American government is officially guaranteed to collapse, well, then, you know, we're going to need that Second Amendment because we got to fight off the Cubans who are going to be invading.
And then the currency will collapse. You need to buy those gold bars from the gold bar guys that advertise in all these places. And I mean, it works for all of them. To have this kind of fear, the only thing it hurts is our entire country. But besides that, for this group of guys that are preying on the same base of that 20% of our population, I think it's 26% every time I look, that will believe virtually anything. That's the 26% that stuck with George Bush.
Uh-huh.
They're the ones that will really, when any of the craziest stuff happens, Obama's a Muslim, 26% will believe it. I'm telling you, there's that one, that number always seems to pop up. And if they don't need to influence everybody, they just need this small group of people. So Wayne LaPierre made $1.4 million last year. You think that was based purely on his members? Of course not. It was based on huge fundraising from people scared out of their minds. And of course, the big gun companies paying them off to keep marketing their product.
Yep.
And so this is all one big elaborate scam, whether it's guns, whether it's the oil industry doing it. You know, there's all these guys are in on it. These consultants are in on it. The toe-sucking scumbags like Dick Morris are in on it. And they make millions, and this is how the game goes. And the NRA is a big part of that.
And let me just say that sucking toes does not necessarily make you a scumbag. But in this instance, it was he did it in a particularly scummy.
There are appropriate moments for toe sucking, just like there's German Scheiße videos out there that, you know, maybe have their moments. Oh, wait, did I just say that on air?
Yeah, we're still on air. All right, well, Cliff, that's as good as time as any to wrap this up because we've got to get going to Chris Rosen. But thank you so much.
I thought I was supposed to be honest.
There you go. We should also say full disclosure: Cliff also runs a side cottage industry where he sells those videos. So we should just say full disclosure.
I know somebody's going to take my little joke there out of context, and I'll be paying for a few things I've said on this show. But
don't worry about that,
Sammy, just to talk to you and your audience, it's all worth it.
All right, Cliff. Well, thank you so much for joining us. As always, a pleasure. We will talk to you again next week.
Thanks for having me on, man.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks. And now it is the moment that I know thousands of you have been waiting for. We're going to take a break when we come back. We're going to be talking to this next guy. Just to give you a little background, for those of you who have just joined this show or began listening to the show sometime in the past year, because the last time he was on this program was, I believe it was like January 4th of 2012. So over a year ago, when this show launched, my former board op at Air America when I was doing the morning was a man named Chris Rosen, who was writing TV and film reviews for The Observer, as far as I knew. And so when we introduced this segment about reviewing movies, I thought, who better than him to, give me a movie recommendation for the weekend? And he was doing it for over a year. And then at one point, like I said, you know, his movie reviews, I started to take issue with. And I said, I don't understand how you're suggesting these movies as a movie reviewer. And he's like, oh, I'm not a movie reviewer. And he told me he was just sort of like editing a website. And so things started to spiral down from there. And then things got complicated and weird. And eventually...
And Kyle.
Yeah, and then Kyle got into the mix. And there was all sorts of controversy. You can go back. if you're a member, you can hear some of those. So he wouldn't return my IMs for the longest time. He wouldn't come on the show, but I sent him a tweet yesterday, and he said yes. So when we come back, we'll be talking to Chris Rosen.
Me minus you is such a lonely ride. The breakup we had has made me lonesome and sad. I realize I love you 'cause I want you back. Hey, hey.
I spent the evening with the radio. Regret the moment.
That's right, ladies and gentlemen.
Reunited,
and it feels so good. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. On the phone, reunited, the prodigal son returns to the Majority Report, Chris Rosen. But before we get to Chris Rosen, we of course need to play one of his theme songs. This was the last one. Here it is. Okay, go ahead.
Christopher Rosen of MovieLine.com.
I'm actually at Movie Phone.
Big shots.
I'm actually at Hot
Vertical Editor.
Here is your theme song. You sit in a dimly lit room watching movies and you dress like a slob.
I'm actually in an office now.
Jimmy Rayson Cakes got to ask you, said, man, how'd you get that job? I said, how did you get that job?
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chris Rosen.
Sam, you know, I'm actually not at Movie Phone anymore either. I dumped that. I'm on Huffington Post Entertainment. You can find me there.
You're on Huffington Post Entertainment now. Now,
yes.
In many respects, I think there's a very good argument to be made that your time on this program launched your career and got you. Look at where you were when you started coming on this program. You were a fake movie reviewer, apparently, at Movie Phone. I don't know what you were doing there, like administrative work. And then because of the gig here as the movie reviewer, you end up going to Movie Line, and then you parlayed your fame from here to the Huffington Post.
Yeah, I'm an entertainment editor at Huffington Post. It's really great, and I guess I could credit you for some of it. But, yeah, you know, not all of it.
Now, yes, I mean, to be...
And I'm no longer a vertical editor either. I'm just a regular editor. Yeah. So no verticals to edit.
No verticals to edit. Now, I want to say that it's only fair that I play one of the other versions of a theme song that people sent in that Jimmy Reefer Cake did that was more supportive of you. Here it is.
I said, oh, me, I'm on Chris Roseanne's side. Sammy, would you stop making fun of the guy? Me, I'm on Chris Roseanne's side. You can find the man at Movie Line.
Huffington Post Entertainment.com. You know, I gotta say, that song I don't love as much as the original song, because I feel like that's an iconic song that people still sing. But the new one, you know, it's not that great.
Right.
Well, sorry, Jimmy.
I know. No. Okay. Now, don't pick a fight with anybody. You
no,
know,
not picking a fight.
Yeah,
not,
I guess you're a reviewer. You're a reviewer.
I'm
so
just
you
critiquing. I'm a movie reviewer, right?
Right. I mean, I guess you can't.
Except I don't review movies, but, you know, close enough.
Wait, what do you mean you don't review movies?
I mean, I you know, I don't write reviews of movies. I read about and write about movies, but not necessarily like I'm not giving a thumbs up on anything. I mean, I guess I could if you'd like.
Now, you see, this is where everything gets murky here, because I see you write stories about movies.
Right. But that doesn't mean you're giving a review of the movie, Sam.
What are you just writing? Like, what is it? I don't understand. Like, what do you write about?
You write about news, you know, write about, you know, the trends, hot trends in movies, write about the Oscars, Golden Globes. Those are big things right now.
Those are the big things right now.
You know.
How many other, just out of curiosity, how many other Huffington Post editors are there? You're not the only one, are you?
No, please. There's a ton of Huffington Post editors. But on the entertainment page, it's me and a few other people. Let me run the entertainment page.
Now, here's the other question that I know people are dying to ask. Back in the day, your Twitter feed was 42-inch
yes.
TV.
Uh-huh.
And now it's just Chris Rosen.
It's actually Chris J. Rosen. You guys can find me there at Chris J. Rosen. Plug. But I changed it to that because, you know, I've noticed a lot on Twitter, a trend has been moving towards having, you know, your name instead of like a handle like you're on AIM in 1997.
Okay. All right.
So I went with Chris J. Rosen because my middle initial is J and my name is Chris Rosen, as you may know.
And I imagine there's a bunch of other Chris Rosens who got there before.
There were a lot of Chris Rosen. I actually wanted C. Rosen or C, like, you know, but that didn't work.
Right.
Because sorry, some C. Rosen beat me to it.
Now, are you going into an office to work or
yes,
what?
Yes, of course. You heard it in the song, Sam. We're still in an office. It's a great office. It's the same office because Movie Phone and Huffington Post, you know, AOL and Huffington Post merged. So,
oh,
I just
so you didn't actually get hired.
Phone.
You didn't actually get hired.
No, I just got transferred from Movie Phone to Huffington Post.
So it was really not so much that you got plucked out of obscurity. It was more just like laziness on the part of the management at Huffington.
No, nobody's lazy here. Come on.
Well, I mean, just it didn't want to rock the boat, in other words.
No, there's nothing. No rocking the boat. It was just a reordering assets, I guess.
Reorder. So you're an asset that got reordered, theoretically.
I'm an asset, yes. Emphasis on that set.
Now, I also have to ask, because people asked me for months and months after, why wouldn't you return my IMs to you? I asked.
Well, I'm a very busy guy here with the vertical editing and, you know, all that stuff.
I can hear you.
And
you're
then,
typing as we speak. I mean, let me ask you this. When you anticipate doing something like this, do you bring in one of those old clickety clack keyboards just to make sure that people think that you're busy, like you're in a newsroom or something?
I do actually, you know, like a teletype, you know, like it's on 1010 Wins.
So what was the other reason? So you're really, really busy. You can't answer any IMs. What else?
Right. I can't answer any IMs. Sorry. The teletype got loud. I can't answer any IMs, but, then, you know, then you just stop calling. I don't know. It was nothing personal. I love you, Sam. I followed your career with great interest. I'm very excited. I still follow. I never unfollowed you on Twitter. I was just always sitting here waiting for the call. I'd be in every Friday at 12:30. I'd be like, oh, I wonder if this is the week.
Did you? Now, how come you never listen? Now, this is the other thing that was, you know, that was, you never listened to the show ever.
I don't know what you're talking about. There's a show?
We're doing a show right now. You're on.
Oh.
Now you have to understand that the audience,
like to talk.
Our audience has grown probably by 150%, I would say, since you were last on. I mean, literally, our audience is more than double what it was just a short year ago. So
wow.
There's a lot of people who probably don't know who you are. And you
I
know.
Mean, they should go into the archives, I guess.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we had quite the banter. Yeah. I'd like to think of me as a co-host.
In a way.
Yeah, I was like your co-host. I think that was great fun.
For a very short period of time.
A very long time.
On
I was
the
a
show.
Co-host.
On
you
the
were kind of my co-host for some of the segments.
Yeah, I guess. Did you play it in your office? Did people, you know, anybody at work ever say, hey, didn't you used to do, weren't you the movie guy on the Majority Report?
No one ever said that to me, but, you know, maybe someday. Fingers crossed.
Be honest.
No.
Okay. How many inches is your TV now?
Actually, I downgraded from 42. I think it's about 32.
What? Now, why did you do that?
Well, you know why? I mean, the trend is kind of towards smaller TVs. So I don't know if you noticed that. So
no,
I haven't noticed that.
I haven't heard
that
projection. Anywhere. Where are you getting this? Where are you getting that this is a trend?
You know, just from the ether. But I had a 42 inch.
You're
LCD
sucking ether
projection.
These days? Is that what you're doing?
No, it's in the ether.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Why? Do you have any ether?
No. Now, I got to say, film guy Matthew, probably pretty pissed to hear you on the...
Who is that? Is that the hack you replaced me with?
Well, it actually took... We actually started a cycle of basically of celebrity guests coming on
uh-huh.
to give film review.
And... Well, that makes sense. I mean, you had only replaced me with some big names. Who are they?
No, and then it was... we had our regulars, Isabel Gillies, and... Matthew film guy, as we call him, as opposed to movie guy.
Matthew film guy, because he's so smart, he can't be called Matthew movie guy.
Well, it's just that he, you know, appreciates film.
Oh my God.
I mean, it's not like the popcorn.
That like, sound like, you heard
tell
was
me,
me
tell me like
eyes.
What some of the past like pieces that you've written for Huffington Post, like what's up with popcorn? Or
look back at horrible.
I've never
bosses.
Written what's up with popcorn, but I will write that down because I think that's a good idea.
What's going on? New trends? More goobers? Less gum gums? Or whatever it is? Or
no? Well, I mean, we all can't write about Amour or whatever Matthew Film Guy is writing about. I guess
the what? Write about the what?
Amour.
Amour.
Yes, it's a new movie.
Oh, okay. All right.
Got nominated for 5 Oscars.
All right.
Well, Matthew Film Guy probably loved it.
Now,
Matthew Film Guy.
That sounded just like you.
That is fighting words there. Now, okay. Now, so so Chris, we've caught up.
This has been great.
Are you still anything else happening in your life, or is it just?
I got engaged in real life. That
seriously?
Huh?
Wow! To the same woman who was living with you before?
Yes.
Wow!
I know. So that's cool.
That's personal, really shocking.
You know, pulling back the curtain on a personal life.
Because people really assume that you get to know somebody after you live with them for a while, and it's still working out.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very well liked.
You what?
Huh?
You're very what?
Well liked.
Okay. All right. That's like, you know, a lot of people say that's also like your 42-inch TV. When you gotta boast about it, maybe it's a compensation issue.
For what, having a small TV?
I don't know. All right, this is going great. Now, I've got somebody who just said Chris Rosen is the reason I began listening to the show. I want to read just one of these IMs here.
Oh.
It's the reason why I began listening to Majority FM in the first place. So now that you're on the inventory step of your grouchy old Obama bashing dickhead rehab program, I forgive
is
you.
Is that a reference to you?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Now I'll switch my Amazon link back to you from the Cleft Palate AIDS Orphan Charity link I had been using. Yours is a better cause. But, that is the classic Chris Rosen fan. And
thanks for the support.
And Kyle writes, now you remember what you want to say anything about that controversy with Kyle, or were you even aware of it? Because I mean,
who's Kyle?
Are you serious? You don't know who Kyle is?
I remember Chris thought it was me who was doing that, so maybe that's okay. Why there's confusion.
Yeah. And who is this, Joe?
This is
the guy
Matt.
You never remembered his name. Yeah, I'm Matt.
I still don't. Matt, that's right.
Now,
got it.
Now, you know, one of the last times we had you on, as sort of like a Christmas joke present.
Matt Binder. Ah, I see that now.
He's noodling around the website, apparently.
From Twitter.
We Kyle, who does our tech, had always wanted to honor you by doing an impersonation of you. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
And so I got you both on the line simultaneously without telling you of that, which I apologize for right now officially. And
That was bad. I got annoyed at that.
Yes, you did. You got very angry. You thought it was a recording of you, though.
That's how good it was.
So you gotta give them the kudos for a good impersonation.
Sure, that was a pretty good impersonation. I guess I don't remember it exactly, but
are you like, I feel like you're not even listening to the conversation. Like, I feel like you're just typing something else.
No, not typing.
What?
No, I was listening. That was
what
fun.
Is the other thing? What is it that you're doing? Because I hear like a little clicky thing.
That's I might be playing with the headphones. I'm on a headphone, iPhone headphones with the little mic.
With the little mic. Okay. And and
man,
are
Matt's
you...
laugh is brutal. How do you sit through that all day?
And
Jesus. It's a tough one.
Now, so where are you now, like physically? Where are you exactly?
I'm in the office, but they have little phone interview rooms that I'm in right now because I don't want to do this in the newsroom and disturb all the actual, you know, real journalists at Huffington Post. So I kind of wanted to come in here just to be a little quiet. I have a little
less
disturbing.
You're in the exact same location. You weren't brought into the Huffington Post hive.
No, it's all the same location, yeah.
The same location as it used to be?
Yeah.
Okay.
Same office.
All right. And do you tell your people, like, when, you know, I'm going out to do an interview here? I mean, you must, you know, there must be like a publish or perish type of mentality there, right?
Not really. I mean, you know, this is a nice thing we're doing here. And, you know, when I have interviews to do, I go in here. Otherwise, you know, you're at your desk working like any other normal job.
What other interviews do you do? Do you get interviewed by other shows?
No, I do interviews. I've interviewed a lot of famous people, you know, some you may have heard of.
Like who? Do you want to tell us?
I interviewed Michael Caine, actually.
Hmm.
Do you know who he is?
Yeah, oh, yeah. That must be a very tough get.
It was pretty tough, but he was really nice.
Okay. What did you find out from him?
We talked about it was for, you know, Dark Knight Rises he was in. So I talked a little about that. Mm-hmm. I asked him about winning an Oscar. He won for Hannah and Her Sisters.
What did he say? It was good?
He didn't show up. It was actually pretty cool. He actually didn't show up because he was filming Jaws 4. He didn't actually think he would get nominated, so he like booked another gig around the same time as the Oscars, and then he won. Wow. But he wasn't there to accept his trophy, which is kind of cool.
Interesting.
Yeah, that was a fun one.
Who else have you interviewed that you've enjoyed interviewing?
I always enjoy interviewing everybody. And everyone, I don't think I've ever had a bad one where I'm like, oh, that was bad. But, you know.
So you really evaluate those things.
Yeah, right. I'd say so.
Yeah, okay. All right, so...
being that you work at a Huffington Post Entertainment now and not just like a site that has the word movie in it, do you deal with things outside of the film industry now too?
Yeah, sometimes we do some music stuff or like, you know, there's also Huffington Post TV, so I don't get to do a lot of TV stuff, but we do some movies, music stuff as well.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. All right, so... So now we've got the Golden Globes. Why don't you tell everybody what the Golden Globes are?
The Golden Globes are an award show, Sam. They give out the Hollywood Foreign Press gives out awards for the best and brightest of movies and television.
Now, isn't that really just a bunch of payola?
Yes. The Hollywood Foreign Press is just a group of people, you know, a foreign press. It's a, you know, it's pretty self-explanatory in their name, and they give out awards. And the rumor is always that they're susceptible to bribes or whatever. That Ricky Gervais made a lot of those jokes when he hosted the show the last 2 years.
Now, who's going to host it this year?
Your friends Amy Poehler and Tina Fey.
Oh, really?
Uh huh.
I saw Amy Poehler recently.
Right, I'm sure you did. Did she tell you about the Golden Globes?
No. No, I didn't really talk to her that much. It was just, hi, how you doing? Okay. So now who's going to win? Now how do you determine, how do you make your picks for this, seeing as how it's all payola-based?
I mean, it's not all payola-based. It's just like whatever they like. Yeah, you know, it's the Hollywood Foreign Press. So it's like if people are nice to them, maybe they'll win. Or, you know, they like rewarding major famous people. So usually if you look for the biggest name, like they've nominated like Robert Downey Jr. for like Sherlock Holmes. They've nominated Johnny Depp for The Tourist, even though that movie was terrible. Nominated Angelina Jolie because they want her to show up. You know, last year they gave an award to Madonna just because, again, want Madonna there.
Uh-huh.
So this year I'm picking, even though he got snubbed by the Oscars, I think Ben Affleck is going to do very well. I think he'll win, you know, Best Director, and I think he'll win Best Picture for Argo.
Did you see that movie?
Yeah, it was okay.
And what was your favorite movie of the year? That is,
I really loved Zero Dark Thirty, actually.
Ooh.
Which I'm sure you've heard about.
I've heard about. I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah,
it's a,
that one was really great.
Yeah, what was so great about it?
I also loved Silver Linings Playbook. And that was great also.
What is that?
The one with Bradley Cooper.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, David, yeah, really, really fun.
Oh, did Cross recommend that?
Yes.
Yeah, we had Cross on last week. He recommended that last week.
Oh, see? So, I mean, great taste, you know, runs in pairs.
Now, is he up for an award, Bradley Cooper?
No. Oh, Bradley Cooper is, yeah. He's up for Best Actor in a Comedy. I think he'll actually, well, he could win. It's either him or Hugh Jackman, because the category is musical comedy. So Hugh Jackman was in Les Miserables.
Huh, okay. And so is there anything interesting that we should be looking for with the Golden Globes or no?
Not really, but it'll probably be a lot of fun because Tina Fey and Amy Poehler are really funny. They actually give a dinner out to, you know, the celebrities who attend, and there's booze and stuff. So it's kind of like maybe the joke would be like it's the drunk Oscars or whatever. You know, people could drink during it. So there's always some like off the cuff surprise thing that maybe you're not expecting.
Uh-huh. And where do we watch this? We watch this on TV?
Yeah, you can watch it on NBC, actually. Tune into your local NBC affiliate on Sunday.
Chris, did you see Skyfall?
I did. I didn't like it that much.
Oh,
really?
About it. Perfect.
Wow. Oh, I couldn't stand it. It was so boring.
Wow. You and I
agree
on
this. It?
I did not like it.
Why did everybody like it? First of all, it's like 3 hours.
Well,
second
no.
of all,
no.
there are no stakes. The ending is so dumb. And then what happens at the end kind of negates the entire movie anyway.
That's, oh my gosh.
That is exactly
Rosen.
Insane.
Without, you know, we've got to be very careful because I've accidentally spoiled the ending of the movie 3 times. We have to cut it out because it's the only movie I've seen in a theater in the past 7 months, 8 months. And
God,
I was,
what a disappointment, right?
But you're right. The stakes were not very high.
No, there were no stakes. And like Javier Bardem, it's just like we've seen that already, dude. Get a new show.
All right. I didn't go down that road so much, but wow. So maybe Rosen, we should reconvene this spot.
Oh, that would be great, Sam. You know me; I'm always game for a little conversation.
It feels though like you're a little rusty with it, though.
You know, I mean, I don't get to. We haven't had the witty repartee in about a year, so it's kind of like I gotta get going.
Yeah.
You come into Majority FM, it's like walking into His Girl Friday.
What do you mean?
That film guy probably got that reference.
Wow, this seems to be a lot of anger here. Did you like
no anger?
Did you like the Django?
No, I love Django. Great. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, so good.
No, I haven't seen any other movie. All I saw was Skyfall.
Oh, well,
do you ever watch any movies on Netflix? You watch any movies that are, you know, not just coming out? Any non?
You know, I have time sometimes. Netflix is pretty good.
What is
I
it? What is this taking up all your time these days?
I mean,
you can't answer
IMs.
You can't. You can't. You can't.
I actually
watch...
have one I could recommend you on Netflix.
Really?
I used to do that as a Netflix instant watch. It was called Bernie. with Jack Black. It actually is a new movie, but it's on Netflix Instant, which is nice. You can watch it for free.
Bernie with Jack Black. Is it good?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was, Richard Linklater directed it, who did like Dazed and Confused and Before yes. Sunrise and those movies. And
Slackers was his
Slackers, and it takes place in Austin, and it's about this guy who is like a mortician and runs a funeral home, and he ends up, caught up with an older woman played by Shirley MacLaine, and then there's like a legal case and stuff. It's really good, actually.
All right,
and it's a lot different to Jack Black than you would expect, because he's kind of not what you would not maybe expect Jack Black to be like a good actor. You know, maybe if you've seen like Gulliver's Travels or like, one of more of his sillier movies, but it's like a real performance.
Well, he was in Bob Roberts, I mean, you could see back in the day he was a serious actor.
Right.
Here's a little name drop Friday for you.
Oh.
Jack and I were friendly back in the day. And in fact, the first TV show that I ever got cast in, called All American Girl, which was Margaret Cho's show. The 13th episode of the season, I think it was, they revamped the entire show and basically did an on-air pilot where Margaret moved in with three roommates. One was Dieter Baderhoff. What's that guy's name? You know him. He was in
Office Space.
I don't know if he was in Office Space. He was in. He ended up being in that Drew Carey show afterwards.
Yes, he was in Office Space. Okay. He was like the guy in Office Space who was like the neighbor.
He was one of the guys. Okay. The other guy was, I think, a guy named Andy Lowry or something like that. I can't remember. Who I think was, part of that sort of like. He may have been even in like. I don't know. He was sort of part of like on the outskirts of that Brat Pack thing. Myself, Margaret Cho, and I beat Jack Black out for the job. We went in together and tested. Yeah. Back in the day.
That's crazy. Cause now he's like a real actor.
Yeah. Now he's incredibly successful and I'm talking to you and it's the highlight of my week.
Win some, lose some, Sam.
Right. I guess so. I guess so. Well, that was fun to go down that memory lane.
So we didn't even talk about the Oscar nominations.
Oh, is that what we're going to talk about?
I thought we were going to talk Golden Globes and Oscars.
Okay, yeah, but I mean, look.
You haven't seen any of the movies. You got to see the movies. You should see Zero Dark Thirty. You could talk about it on your show.
I will probably see that movie.
It's very much in the news with all the torture debate. And stuff.
Yes, indeed. What film. Else would you recommend I watch? Because apparently, Cross told me last week that he's been watching this stuff on the SAG screeners, and apparently I think I got one of those like notices you got to go down to the post office. I think I got mine, but I'm not sure yet.
Oh yeah, that's right. You're in SAG, so you can watch all of these. What did David say?
David liked that one, but I didn't go into it. I didn't realize that the Oscar nominations had already happened.
I'm trying to think what else I could tell you to watch. All those ones we mentioned are really good.
Oh, I guess they hadn't happened last week.
Django.
When did they happen?
They happened yesterday.
I'd like to see Django. There's a whole set. Django. But my wife is pregnant.
Oh, congratulations. Mazel tov.
So I don't, now it's like even that
Forget,
much harder.
You're never going to see a movie.
No, never.
2020. You'll see whatever's coming out. Marvel's The Avengers 8.
Right, exactly. I think I probably will be allowed to go see a movie. Yeah, probably around 2020. Probably
so that's good.
2019.
Well, let's pick this up then.
Okay, well, great. I'll call you in 7 years.
All right. Sounds good, Sam.
All right, Chris. Thanks so much for joining us. Ladies
and Dave, good laugh.
Okay. There you go, folks. Matt. Chris Rosen.
Matt, right. Sorry. Bye.
Chris Rosen, folks. Wow. All right. So what we should do? What did you say?
You didn't even say it on air.
Wow.
You got it.
What should we... No, Michael. No, what do you? Freebie Friday or what?
Yeah, might as well. Let's just get right to the news. There's a story with that guy.
Which guy?
The guy who said he agrees with Aiken partially.
Oh yeah, this is interesting because you have apropos of our talk with Cliff Schechter today, Representative Phil Gingrey. He's in the news today for two reasons. One is this is one of those classic got an A from the NRA type of Republicans from Georgia who is now acknowledging that we may need some form of reasonable gun control. And again, remember, folks, I keep saying that gun control is an issue, is one of those social ID signifiers to the right wingers. So he's come out with this, but simultaneously he has to, now that he's taken, he has to give back to his right wing nut jobs. So apparently it's being reported that he was at a Cobb Chamber of Commerce breakfast in Smyrna, Georgia the other day. And he basically said that Todd Akin and Richard Murdoch, they got a raw deal in their perspective on rape. He said, I've delivered a lot of babies. He's apparently an OBGYN.
And which makes it all the more disturbing.
Yes. And he said that Akin wasn't far off on the science when he said rape victims rarely get pregnant because their bodies have ways of shutting that whole thing down. He said, quote, I've delivered a lot of babies, and I know about these things. It's true. This is according to the Marietta Daily Journal via Evan Santoro at Talking Points Memo. We tell infertile couples all the time that are having trouble conceiving because of the woman not ovulating, just relax. Drink a glass of wine. Don't be so tense and uptight because all that adrenaline can cause you not to ovulate. So he was partially right, wasn't he?
So when I deliver that baby, I could just take one look at the baby and say, you know what? I can tell that's not a rape baby.
Now, and he
said, was a relaxed baby. That's the Republican days of saying something with incredibly tasteless about rape back down to
now,
zero.
Now, listen. He is trimming hairs. What is it? Splitting hairs so much here, so desperately trying to associate himself with those comments, but to do it in a way that he knows that his fellow doctors won't go, dude, what is wrong with you? So the guy is really trying to basically signal to the lunatics in his party, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm going to say it in a slightly different way, but anybody who's expecting me to come here and reiterate what Todd Akin says, I'm going to give you something to chew on. And he went on to say, Murdoch basically said, look, if there is conception in the aftermath of rape, that's still a child, and it's the child of God, essentially. He's trying to justify Murdoch's comments. Incidentally, folks, your kids, not your kids. They're child of God's. You're just the vessel for, I guess, God inseminating you if you're a woman. So here's Murdoch. And the beautiful thing about Murdoch, of Phil Gingrich, is you may not remember this, but 3 years ago now, 4 years ago, he had said something at a time where when Rush Limbaugh was a huge liability for the Republicans and the Obama administration was citing Rush Limbaugh as the leader of the Republican Party. He had said something to the effect of Rush Limbaugh is not the leader of this party. No way. And then Rush Limbaugh got word of it and Phil Gingrich showed up on his program the next day to apologize. Now, back in 2009, we were doing Break Room Live. And we had reinterpreted that phone call. And here is the reinterpretation of that Phil Gingrich basically putting himself prostrate for a Rush Limbaugh call from 4 years ago. Here it is.
We'd like to welcome to the microphone Georgia Congressman Phil Gingrich, who was ended up being quoted yesterday by Jonathan Martin and somebody else at Politico.com. Congressman Gingrich asked to come on the program today to address that, and we are happy to have him here. Congressman, welcome to the program, sir.
Well, thank you, Rush. I appreciate your giving me this opportunity. When I spoke to the Politico magazine, I don't know what I was thinking. I put my foot in the mouth. I just want you to know you are my leader, and anything you want me to do, I will do to make it up to you. I'm willing to service you manually or orally, for that matter, and I don't know if you're into that type of thing, but I also have a wife, and she is a honey. Come on over here, Carolyn.
Hi, Rush. It would be my pleasure.
And it would be her pleasure. And if you want me in the room while you take her, that would be great. I'll do that. Or I could take photos. I got a great video camera. If you want, I could tickle you on the flip side, too. You know, forget just my wife. I got a daughter, too. Okay, she's a little phone shy, but she won't be when it's time for you, Rush. Anything you need, you tell me.
I appreciate that. I have, you know, quite a lot of experience with people in the media, and believe they loved the little storm that they were able to create yesterday. And
there you go, ladies and gentlemen, from the Break Room Live archives.
What happened to the other guy?
That other guy?
Yeah.
From Break Room Live?
Yeah. Whatever happened to him?
I don't remember. Yeah. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the phone number if you want to be part of this program. Kyle, Chris Rosen sounds like he squats in the buildings of New York media companies until they give him a job. Also, I wonder how many inches his TV is now. Sounds like things are going so well at 32 inches. Everyone who is well-liked always walks around saying, I'm well-liked. Everyone who is not typing saying, not typing. Kevin 11721, how about requiring guns to have liability insurance like cars? If you're high risk of committing a crime or responsibility securing a weapon, high insurance premiums would make a gun owner onerous or possibly denied altogether. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Crooks and Liars, Tea Party brand now toxic. Only 8% of Americans identify as members. Amusing anecdote. It's unfortunate that Cliff's theme is already perfect, considering that German Scheisse film revelation would have made a nice refrain. Two-year-old snot-nosed kid. I already read that one. Great to hear back from you. Maxercise. Now he is very busy, so this may not be practical, but you should definitely have Rosen on every year. Bartleby, 141. I'm ambivalent about Chris Rosen reunion tour. I will say one thing about his segment. Possibly the best he has ever sounded. I recall his segments almost always involve some sort of issue with his audio. Chem Champion, gotta love having Alan Grayson back in Congress in response to the 67 House Republicans voting against money for Sandy relief. He said, it's the same 67 over and over again. It's the bath salts caucus, the people that would rather eat your face than cut taxes on the rich. That is pretty fantastic. Congratulations, Chem Champion. Great. Showing what Chem Champion has really, in just less than 2 years worth of being active in his party out in Washington State, he is moving up further and further in the Democratic Party. He is obviously a guy who we've heard from in the past, who's has extremely sound positions on Social Security and the deficit and this and that. And he is now beginning to wage legitimate influence by committing himself to going through this process, and is a great model for everyone. We'll have you back on, Chem Champion, at one point this year to get an update of how things are going for you. PF 1800, there are fewer than 100 people in the Hollywood Foreign Press. They are the only people who get to vote for the Golden Globes. It's ridiculous. I've heard good things about Bernie. I want to see it. Let's go quickly to the phones. Michelle in the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Michelle.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How you doing?
I'm very well. Listen, that program that you did with Milo, is it on archive?
Oh, the one where she spoke? Yeah, that is the final show of the year. I think it was on, was it on December 21st, maybe? Yeah.
That's right, the 21st.
When she came in, yeah, she was, I'm not sure at what point she came in to give us her year. And roundup, but it was towards the end.
I remember when she was just in the stomach, you know.
Yeah, I know. Back in the day, that was
back in the day. So I caught her. I heard just the tail end of her, you know. So I was trying to go back on the archive to listen to the whole show, but I somehow I wasn't hearing it, you know.
Yeah, I'm not sure at what time it was, but if you go back to the 21st, people may have mentioned it in the comments at one point or something.
Okay, and I'm surprised that Chris loved Django, because I saw it and I wasn't impressed with Skyfall.
Okay, I don't know the movie, so I can't really comment.
I was surprised that he loved Django, because I feel the same way. I think it was just overhyped.
Yeah, well, you know, Chris is idiosyncratic. He likes, I think he likes things that are just violent for the sake of violence.
He's got that it is, you know. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you ever
love it.
If you ever met Chris, you'd understand that maybe he likes to escape into movies.
Okay.
All right.
So, Sam, what do you think of Oliver Stone's Untold History?
I haven't caught up with that yet. I haven't caught up with it, but I'm really interested in it, and I've heard really good things. And he's a guy I would love to have on the program to talk about it.
And then it is very good. And then this last episode coming up on Monday,
I'll check it out.
Obama.
I'll check it out. Thanks for the call, Michelle. Good hearing from you.
Thanks.
Bye.
Okay.
In a few years, we'll be able to say, I remember when little Shylock was in the stomach, too.
That's right. Goddess, Goddess Livia. Hi, Sam. Good to hear Rosen again, but it definitely made me think that once or twice a year for him is enough. I'm so sick of hearing this literally medieval ideology that a woman can't get pregnant unless she enjoyed it. Yeah, I mean, of course, that's what's going on there. I mean, that is the way that they would measure, right, whether or not a woman got pregnant. I mean, was raped. Was one of their tools in which they would determine. Triangle Bill. Hi, Sam. Happy Friday. My own personal small world moment of the week. I'm sitting here in cafe streaming the show in a cafe, thumbing through the local liberal progressive free weekly. And there's an article about your buddy Mark Maron. Apparently, he's here doing three nights in our local comedy club, Charlie's Good Nights. And he's there tonight and tomorrow night, so I may try to go. If I can get a chance, I'll talk to him. Be sure to tell him how awesome you are and how you're the podcast is the most life-changing phenom since sliced bread. Have a great weekend. Thank you. I appreciate that. I'll let you know how it goes next week. If you or Matt or others are interested, the Weekly here wrote an article interviewing Maron. They talk about him, about his little podcast. It is indieweek.com. Send us a link at majorityreporters@gmail.com. Dave with Dignity. I don't know more Red Friday streaming from Ottawa live. Great. Thank you. What just happened there? Herbowitz, Sam, can you look into the Agenda 21 conspiracy? I know what this is. United Nations has a non-binding resolution encouraging people essentially to go green. I think that's what it is, an urban planning to
sustainability document.
Right.
And it actually empowers civil society and NGOs. It's one of these things that will never get implemented, but if it was, it would probably be really good.
Right. Beck is all over it. Yes, indeed. I think he wrote a book about it. Crazy as it sounds, several states have passed laws in response to concerns about it, and it's ended numerous sustainable development projects throughout the country. It needs to be exposed to the insanity that it is. Yes, indeed. You're right. I mean, but how do you do those things?
It's actually in the Republican platform this last election.
Right. I remember that. Drysno 9. Do you think Cliff would trade me a copy of The Real McCain for a pair of my wife's New Balance sneakers? I don't know. Ask him on Twitter. Clower, your Rosen segment was great. Baird Martin, Sam, just started my subscription yesterday. Thank you very much. I'm a listening member to this via member podcast. I would like a shofar if possible. Oh, well, in that case.
It's Double Shot Friday. You join on a Friday, you get a fanfare and a shofar.
1004, Sam, I never really questioned the popular assumption that the Second Amendment was crafted to empower the citizenry against a tyrannical U.S. government. Since hearing Alex Jones, I thought it through, and that assumption is ridiculous. But a lot of people accept it as accurate. Where did this theory come from? It's based on a Supreme Court ruling. How can we argue effectively against it? Well, it was floating around there. I don't know the initial cases that that interpreted that way, but I do know there were two cases in 2008 and 2010, I believe, which really inhibited both the federal government and the state government from imposing some type of gun control or banning of a certain class of weapons. So I don't know how it was developed. I think I saw a piece that told me about how that was developed. But I know that the Supreme Court in 2008, 2010 had a couple rulings. I can't remember the names of them off the top of my head now. That get very little notice in these conversations in terms of where the parameters are. It might be worth us tracking down a Supreme Court expert and getting a sense of where those parameters are.
I got the greatest ever at replies to the Majority Report account and to you in response to your Alex Jones video that we put up on YouTube yesterday.
Yeah.
Greatest. You want me to read them? Even better than the one you retweeted this morning.
Okay.
You know what? All of you are going to end up in concentration camps. Why don't you free your mind and fight? Really, people like you are the reason this country is going to shit. Why don't you do some of the research?
I was a little bit under the weather when I wrote that. And I
Klug, who is this Oscar fellow? Moshi Moshi, has Rosen ever uttered a sentence that wasn't sarcasm? Jay Tingle, disappointed to hear Grayson disparaging bath salts. Maybe if you get a bad batch, it could lead to face eating. But in the main, bath salts make one more alert and productive and can be seen as a labor enhancer. As your interview with Rosen demonstrates, bath salts can actually lead to career advancement. It certainly explains Jack Black. Cool J146, can you do an interview about Idle No More? Yeah. I also heard that... in solidarity with that, Naomi Klein just turned down some type of award or honor. I got to look into it. The First Nations Reserve, where the blockade took place, has the lowest male birth rate in the world. This is a blockade, a train blockade in Ontario. Poetic, 4321. New Cedarista here. Joined last week's. Congrats on the new baby. Horns throughout centuries. Thank you. Sugar High. With all the right-wing talk about our violent culture, films, and video games, how come the establishment liberals don't bring up the cultural effects of a 12-year war? Oh, pshaw. Oh, pshaw. Okajik. Where's Matthew Film Guy? Who's this Chris Rosen joker? Also, I saw this preview on IFC, a new show, some guy named Mark Maron. Not funny. Any chance you can use your Soros contacts to get your own show with Al Jazeera English? On a serious note, I've turned into Al Jazeera English, and it's pretty good. The other day, I had an in-depth piece on fracking in Australia that was good but sad. Fracking is really bad. Have a good weekend. I'd like to check that out. Herbowitz. Invite callers about Agenda 21 for debate. That's how you can do it. You're great. Oh, that would actually be fun.
That is such a good idea.
Chem Champion with breaking news. Jay Rockefeller will not seek re-election in 2014. West Virginia will be very hard to hold without an incumbent. At least Obama won't be on the ballot. West Virginia voted less for Obama than for Kerry. Yeah, indeed. They're tracking... red and racist. Bartleby, sorry, Sam, sorry if this is already covered, but assume you'll be covering the so-called settlement the banks got on subprime lending. Another aggressively nauseating sop. Yeah, on Monday we're going to have Matt Taibbi on the program, who's going to be talking about this and more in terms of the banks. He's got a big piece out in Rolling Stone magazine. And the final IM of the day... Agnos Liberalis, I'm moving Sam out of the motel and up to Lookout Mountain. Moving on up. Well, congratulations. All right, folks. See you Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. guess I might have lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah.